Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Let's hand Liverpool the title and relegate Fulham. It's the end of game week 3. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Tuesday the 29th of September. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I am Pete Donaldson.
Luke Moore already on his phone. Sorry, yeah. Mate. Is our chat that stinky?
He's left his microphone. He's disavowing his Nalgene bottle of the promise of a lid just to make me happy.
Will the slander ever end? I was just moving my phone over there, so I was
Why?
Out of the way.
You'd get distracted.
I wouldn't. Is that libel, actually? Sorry.
Might be, yeah.
Because it's recorded.
It's neither, is it really? That's being, it's neither. I've got no reputation to maintain, so it's probably neither.
I know, me and you were both in a Zoom meeting yesterday, Luke, and I noticed that you were tweeting in the middle of it. I was like, that, hang on, that was a 2:45. We were on a meeting there.
That's such a low blow.
One thing I would say is I was only tweeting in Pete's bits.
Really relevant
Pete,
stuff.
Pete was probably talking, yeah.
Dad logged off.
That tweet banged, by the way.
Did it?
It did about 2,000 likes.
What was the tweet?
What? You've never done 2,000.
I'll tell you what it was. It was, I'm old now. I'm like officially old now.
Yeah, and I also just wanted to say thank you for being 40.
You actually said that sincerely earlier today.
Yeah, so, I mean it. It makes me feel pretty good.
So I'm now one of these people who can do the old man yells at clouds.
Yeah.
I can really lean into it. So people just think of, people just think of me as like some kind of horrendous like Brexit gammon and I can say whatever I want. It's really freeing.
Well, you look like that actor who is a very Brexit gammon kind
This again.
He also might be older than me, sadly.
He's just launched a political party, but we don't have to mention his name. Cool. We mentioned him last time we were on together. Anyway, yelling at clouds.
Pete mentions him every time he sees me.
So anyway, I saw a
tweet that someone posted essentially proclaiming to be some kind of tactical judge expert on Twitter, right? And they basically have the Twitter account where they put video up and they tactically analyze it.
Okay,
it's fine, whatever people are interested in, that's absolutely fine. And they posted a really earnest post about how these two world-class talents are on the same wavelength and how it was amazing how to see them link up this way. And it was basically just a 1-2 in a football match. And I just thought, do you know what? We used to do those in the under-14s and we used to practice them and they used to work. So I'm not having that. So I stepped into it. I put my head above the parapet and
it banged.
It did bang. I got a lot of stick back, but that's the way it goes.
I did actually see it and I thought that's not worth a like.
Mason.
Thing is, though, even if you click likes nowadays, people can see your likes. I remember back in the day when they started doing that, people started noticing that Ian Wright used to like a lot of pornography.
Oh, did he?
It's brilliant.
The way that, that MP as well also did a tweet saying, why are every website I go to is the filthy internet serving me up pornographic adverts? And then someone replies,
cock in the corner.
It's based on your browser history, mate. Anyway, Kate.
We've got a cock in the corner as well.
Whoa.
Who is it?
We haven't.
Yeah, no.
Luke and Pete back on with Kate Mason.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Lovely.
You played the role of the substitute teacher?
I find that really quite offensive.
You
actually
said that to me earlier.
No, I didn't say it. Someone else said it to me, and I said, I find that quite offensive. And you said, no, you're a teacher, not a substitute teacher. And I cried. And that's why we're late recording this. Little peek behind the scenes, everybody. Let's talk about the champions of 2020-21. It's Liverpool 3, Arsenal 1. Goal on his debut as a substitute for Diogo Jota, and Andy Robertson helpfully contributing 2 goals.
Just helping
one for
out.
Each side.
You're saying the champions of 2020-21 already? That's a big shout. That.
Just my little joke, Luke.
Yeah. I think you do need to signpost that. It's going to be very tricky for me. It's like a minefield.
That's a reference to this whole ludicrous, like, you know, we have to, oh, the table. So-and-so is top of the table. It's like, there's been 3 games. Yeah. It's a long, long, long way to go.
I remember when Graham Souness, I think it was, when he was a Liverpool manager, said, don't look at the table till Christmas. And everyone's like, oh, that's interesting, actually. And then I think he might have said it again as Newcastle manager. And everyone went, you ain't going to make it till Christmas,
no,
mate.
You'll be out, mate. You will be out.
I thought it was a pretty interesting game. But I thought it was an interesting game chiefly because of...
Another handball?
of Roy Keane and Jurgen Klopp, to be honest. That was the gold nugget we wanted on this show ahead of today's record, wasn't it?
Well, pretty much in every post-match, Klopp was just flattering every team that they've come across, your Leeds and your Arsenals. Arsenal are in 100% form. They're brilliant. Blah, 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 blah. Because I think he's trying to sort of drum up this kind of a little bit of siege mentality. Come on, lads, let's keep on going. We've got, like you always say, like Alex Ferguson said, it's the hardest thing to do to retain a championship once you've won it. And he is trying to foster this then versus us, kind of, they think we can't do it. They're criticising our defensive line. Yeah. They're doing this. They're doing that. The media hates us. Blah blah blah. We're going to win this. We're going to win this primary. We're going to win this election.
When you
try and stop us.
Also, when you think of baseball capped managers, automatically you think Tony Pulis. But at some point, that's going to be breached, and you're going to start thinking of Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
I wonder when that's going to be, because he's always wearing a baseball cap.
No, because the difference with Tony Pulis, I would say, is that he's unrecognisable without a baseball cap. He looks like an entirely different person.
He looks like a church.
Whereas Jurgen Klopp, he's sort of with or without.
He might become so synonymous with it that he becomes the standard bearer for the baseball cap.
Does Klopp have like a room full of different baseball caps like Shaw Lamiobi did on that Cribs time? Like, you remember when they did Cribs and you just had a room full of caps?
And he also called the police because he thought he'd been robbed, and it turned out his house was really messy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we've all been there. Yeah.
On the Keane v Klopp thing, I think the joy and satisfaction that Roy Keane got out of that was palpable. I think he really enjoyed.
Really? Because I thought he was a bit scared.
No way.
It was a bit Shearer taking a swing at Alan Shearer for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And Shearer not flinching. Yeah. It was enjoyable.
But I think that kind of got him a bit tumescent.
Yeah.
He was a bit like, I'm back in there. I'm still relevant. But I also think I've long suspected, Kate, that Roy Keane's gone over the top about how much he's enjoying, generally, not last night, but how much he's enjoyed how good Liverpool are, because I think that he thinks it'll annoy Alex Ferguson. and that is really what he's all about. So I think that's why
it's an epoch-defining team.
Yeah, I think better than we ever did. I think that that's why he's done it. But last night, obviously, Klopp kind of bit back. But I felt like the glint in Keane's eye made it look like to me he actually did really enjoy it. I don't think he was scared. I personally didn't think he was scared.
But it was just the way he was like, no, I've been praising you. Sorry, did you say I was sloppy? I've been praising you.
Yeah. But at the end he said,
well, said you were cloppy.
He's a bit sensitive, isn't he? Imagine what it'd been like if they had lost. Get the last word in there.
Yeah. He's always going to have the last word because he's in the studio.
I don't care what the result of the divorce proceedings are as long as I get the last word. But anyway, it was a good game. I felt like Arsenal... looked to me like they've really improved. And what I mean by that is, I know it sounds maybe a bit counterintuitive because they were beaten, but they don't look fazed by this type of trip. We can't anymore under Arteta, and we can't forget
they rolled over constantly.
Their record away from home against those other big teams has been absolutely horrendous. And I think, you know, there was a moment, I think it was at 2-1, where Lacazette had a chance, the one where he wasn't offside, and that could have really that's the kind of moment those games hinge on. And he obviously missed the chance because Alisson's presence is just ridiculous. I don't think it's said enough how big his presence is as a goalkeeper. And he obviously was able to save it. And that made it, for me, a bit of a key moment. But I'd have been encouraged if I was an Arsenal fan watching that. I know they got beaten, but Liverpool are a good team. And I think they look a little bit of a different proposition these days.
And at 3-1, I mean, at 2-1, a goal was scored where a hand was involved, you would say, as well.
Oh, it was sort of chesty hand.
Well, I just think that...
Chesty hand.
Shall we just use hands from now on? It just seems to be a real problem.
Do you think Jota handled it?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
It wasn't really looked at much, was it?
No.
Kind of glossed over.
Well, Guendouzi was the only one who actually kind of put his hands up and went, what the f... What is going on?
He's the boy who cried wolf. He moans about everything all the time. Do you think there was just handball fatigue?
Look, not
doing any more of that.
No.
Forget it.
You've had too
much. We've had diagrams all weekend about bits of your body, what is and isn't. Mm. I feel like I know it now.
Yeah, I do as well. I hate it, but I know it.
Yeah.
Again, can't like my ex-wife. I'm a joke. I wasn't married before, Kate. It's a joke. The first goal in the game is interesting as well because it's a goal of such poor quality that you felt a bit like...
Oh. I actually loved it. That's probably my highlight. It was so good. And also speaking of Alisson, the way he's like
clawing
at it.
Yeah, clawing at it. The one man who can use his hands, for goodness sake.
Like a pterodactyl.
Yeah, exactly.
Writhing on the ground.
Yeah, and then Robertson did that kind of typical thing of a player of his quality where he would just go, do you know what? I've messed up there, so I want to go score one.
Yeah, he was a tiny bit hilarious in the post-match where he was on about, he was like, oh yeah, but the thing was I was able to put it behind me and then spoke about it for about, 20 minutes.
And he's probably still talking about it now.
He's quite charismatic, kind of post-match interviewee, I think. I think he's got a lovely accent. Lovely, charismatic chap. I like him a lot.
I love that accent. I like listening to it.
Great news.
But overall, it was an enjoyable game to watch, wasn't it? It felt like it wasn't quite played at the intensity in the... I wonder if Liverpool have... I know they've won... every league game so far this season, but they haven't looked as imperious as they have in the recent past. There can be many, many reasons for that. Obviously, I've talked a bit about on the show last week a bit about how I wonder if the lack of a crowd is mean the players don't feel quite as inhibited in what they do. But some people have suggested that maybe it's a weird situation, real lack of pre-season that means that maybe they're not quite as physically fit, which can lead to mental concentration issues. I don't necessarily buy that because I think that they have had a really big gap where they were able to rest. I know it was different circumstances, but they were able to rest. Now they've gone straight through. I don't know if you should be seeing the fatigue just yet. I feel like that will come a bit later on.
No.
Mental fatigue around that time, wasn't it?
That is true.
During the lockdown. And I think someone who certainly was demonstrating some mental fatigue was Hector Bellerin with his two foul throws. Is that sort of Liverpool's got a throw-in coach? You don't...
What
the hell is this?
Yeah, who famously won't work with any other Premier League team.
I think that's legitimate.
Oh, really?
I like that.
It's great.
As a policy.
He's been offered other jobs, but he won't take
it. He's got some magic dust and he doesn't...
Do you think that was Bellerin going, this is how badly we need it? This is an emotional plea.
Well, I think somebody worked out quite recently that I think Europe-wide, I think it's only 3% of corners are scored.
Yeah.
And so like the importance of the corner is just, and we all get excited when your team gets a corner, but it rarely happens that anyone puts it in the net.
It just reminds me of a video that someone shared earlier this week. I think it might have been after Roy de Lapp's son scored for Manchester City, maybe last week.
That's still painful,
but I know, yeah. Jesus. I know. But someone showed a video of Boaz Myhill in goal. It was against Stoke. It might have been when Boaz Myhill played for, I can't remember. He played for Hull, didn't he? Might have been someone else. But Boaz Myhill gets a pass back and he's under pressure and it's amazing footage. You see him work out that if he puts the ball out for a throw, Rory de Lapp's going to throw it in, so he just puts it out for a corner. He's like, oh, we'd rather have a corner.
Magic.
It's so flustered,
magic,
isn't it? It's like, oh no, I have to react to this.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny. What do you think of Jota's appearance, so to speak?
Yeah, I think he's a good player. I think he's also got his best years ahead of him as well. I think it was a pretty shrewd move for Liverpool to get him. They got him pretty quick, nipped in there. He obviously wanted to go. They were able to agree a fee pretty quickly. I think he'd be a real asset to them. I think that also, Liverpool are so good at their jobs without the ball that they are, given that we've just talked about with this kind of weird framing of the season, they are going to find that they need to freshen it up, particularly in the front three. Mm. If you look at Mane, Salah and Firmino, they all know their job so well. And I think Jamie Carragher did a really good job last night of pausing it when they didn't have the ball and looking at their positions. Mm. Like it goes underplayed in football coverage generally that even the top players only have the ball at their feet a fraction of the time.
Yeah.
And so as a result, if you've only got the ball at your feet 1% of the game, what you do in the other 99% is really important. Yeah. And Liverpool are brilliant at that.
Yeah. 30 seconds or whatever it is.
Exactly. And if Jota can fit into that, then great. I think it's a positive sign. And they're doing the right thing where they're strengthening in good areas while they're at the top, which gives them more leverage.
Will Salah be all right with that? There was a little bit of a moment, wasn't there?
he stole the ball from Jota.
You get an opportunity. Well, because what happened was Jota missed one.
Salah thought, I'm not letting you do that.
You've had your chance, mate. You've had your one chance.
He's one of the few Premier League footballers who can just take a ball off someone and go, no, I'm going to take it round.
If you listen to the audio, you actually heard him go, if anything, I'm doing you a favour. I saw what happened last time.
But their signings have kind of made really good starts. I think the slowest player that you sort of think signed for Newcastle, where'd that come from? Jesus Christ. I mentioned Shaul Ameobi, I mentioned Alan Shearer. Yeah. Who had 5 minutes for Liverpool. God, imagine if Newcastle were Liverpool. I think Minamino is the only player who hasn't really kind of hit the ground really, really running. But he's starting to squeeze into the team now. Obviously, he played in the cup.
And he scored, didn't he?
Yeah, he scored a couple, I think.
And we felt sorry for him, didn't we, on the trophy presentation?
We did, because he wasn't in it.
Friends yet.
And then didn't Jordan Henderson grab him and be like, come on in, mate.
Captain material.
Have a bit of my COVID.
Captain material, that's why. And also, Liverpool were out Thiago as well, weren't they? Mm. So that's another thing. Oh, and one thing I should say, is changing the subject slightly, is the boys made an emotional appeal yesterday to find a Richard Dunn non-goal. Mm. And it was found on social media, so people can check it out on that Football Ramble.
Okay. I tell you what, the Ramble social media is pretty incredible.
Like an army.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mean coming from us. I mean the people around it.
Yeah.
It's really nice, mostly.
They're the secret as to why any success we have had is down to them. And Pete.
Yeah.
Down to Pete, really. Yeah.
Oh, Pete.
Oh.
Yeah, and we've been making some portraiture earlier because Pete leaves his laptop on its
side.
90
side,
degree yeah. axis. I mean, I need
to be ready. If a meme comes at me hard, I need to be able to receive it and deflect.
Yeah, but you can't
see it. I've got that.
Take the meme.
It's on the floor.
The
guys, just picture it. You won't have to because you can follow the social media later. Mm. It's on the floor. He's got it on the floor.
Yeah.
On its side.
Yeah. Could be ready for any.
You can't see anything.
You need a humorous Photoshop about Andy Carroll. I'm there. Andy Carroll, third mention. Thank you.
Yeah. And
Jesus. What? Thanks for not mentioning the weekend, though.
I once went to Pete's house and he was using an iPad as a mouse mat. So that's the kind of man you're dealing
with. It's not even a good mouse mat, Kate, Pete. What are you talking about?
Some people just want to see the world burn. And Pete Donaldson is one of those.
Literally, it's glass with
garbage electronics.
Yeah. I cannot understand that, Pete. It's glass, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't.
Well, the thing is, Kate, Luke characteristically has got it wrong. And it was actually a MacBook Air, and I was using a MacBook Pro.
That's right. He was using the MacBook Pro, and he was using the MacBook Air as a mouse.
Yes.
Mat. That tells you everything you need to know about the man.
And I was sat on a throne made out of iMacs.
His pathetic opulence in a time of recession again. He's like a politician drinking champagne.
I'm a one man saviour of the computing. Industry.
Yeah, that is good of you, I guess. Yeah good point.
Anyway.
Well, I'm still processing that.
Yeah.
And I think I will be probably for the rest of this show. So should we move on to Fulham?
Yeah.
Give our minds a bit of a rest, perhaps. They lost to Aston Villa 3-0 at home. I don't think home matters anymore, but still they lost 3-0. Jack Grealish, Conor Hourihan, Tyrone Mings with the goals. The classic 5:45 Monday night kickoff at Craven Cottage. Enjoyable.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to process that.
Mm. Yeah.
And Fulham, whichever way you slice it, aren't a very good team.
Oh, dear.
And your reaction to that, part sympathetic, part patronising, is the reason they will not get out of that relegation zone all season.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
It's like they don't care. I mean, well, did you see the tweet afterwards? The chairman's son, who's a vice something or other, vice chairman probably.
Mm. Yeah.
He was like apologising and saying, I apologise to Fulham, Tony Khan, I apologise to Fulham FC supporters for our performance tonight. We looked at centre-backs. He explained basically why they haven't brought in any defensive cover. I apologise repeatedly for that performance. I'm sorry, everybody. We need to do a better job.
So is he talking about his own kind of like signings? Or
yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Effectively, but also just the performance itself. I don't know, what do we make of that?
At this stage, in
particular?
I felt like they were far too passive. They made it far too easy for Aston Villa to score, particularly the third goal. They conceded at such a crucial time just after half-time. I know it's a cliche, but if you're... at 2-0, the next goal is massive. People say 2-0 is a dangerous
goal. It didn't even feel like the next goal would be massive because they were because it was Fulham that were 2-0 down yeah. and it just didn't feel like anything.
Because Mina scored it about 2 minutes after half time.
You kind of want to give Villa credit because every single player on that pitch was excellent, really, really good. But why is that happening? Because Fulham just giving them space, the intensity just isn't there, the turnover just isn't there. You know, Watkins looked great, Grealish was of course again in control, and this keep going with a kind of Villa have kind of like picked up where they left off at the end of last season.
They've been in good form,
really good form. And so like that'll be the bedrock that keeps them in the league, keeps them way more comfortable than they were last season. But Fulham just looks so slow and ponderous, like Parker has said that they will be passengers, and they look like passengers.
Yeah, I don't actually think Villa necessarily will be that safe this season. I think they still might struggle. I think there's obviously a lot of football to be played. But you're right about Fulham, Pete. I think that back three they played of Hector, Odoi and Ream last night, just nowhere near good enough. And they made it far too easy for Aston Villa, who showed a bit more nous and a bit more experience, as you'd probably expect. But I mean, It's hard to know where Fulham go from here. We talked last night in the WhatsApp group of a management change, which would be very difficult to do. But we've seen this happen time and time again. It's happened with the club I support, Portsmouth. You know, when you hire a club legend, and maybe it's a bit too much of a stretch to say Scott Parker's a club legend, but he's certainly synonymous with the club. Emotionally, it's very difficult to move beyond that person because you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. So the fans aren't going to turn on Scott Parker. And weirdly, in this current era we're living through, it's not really going to matter because the fans are at the stadium anyway. So if they're anything like the fans of Portsmouth at the moment, they're just hammering the Instagram over and over again to get rid of the manager. But I'm not sure the effect that's having. So it's a worrying time for them. It seems... It's not that long ago, for example, that someone like Tom Kearney was saying, can't wait to see what he can do in the Premier League because he's been fantastic in the Championship. Last season, again, great. Now what's he doing? Well, maybe it's a bit too early to say. Maybe I'm being unfair. But so far, the answer is absolutely nothing.
He came back in. He'd been subbed, right? So he came out. He was restored to the starting lineup, as we say. And you'd have thought that would help give them a bit more solidity. But it just didn't. I mean, afterwards, Scotty Parker said, little Scotty Parker. Yeah, It's hard. That's why I made the noise, isn't it?
He's in the McDonald's advert. He played for your team.
He played for Spurs. I really liked him at Spurs as well. Yeah. He was that sort of... I mean, I know it's like a lazy thing to admire, but he's the sort of, you know, hardworking, like always at the races kind of a player. Anyway, he said, it's tough to fix the defensive frailties. I went with a back five today just to maybe give us a bit more solidity. Here we go. And it didn't work, obviously. I felt like it worked well in possession, but you can't be that fragile.
Yeah, football's a funny game for that because you can flip to a back five and play in that way. But then if you're not careful, you give up the control of the midfield and you get in real trouble. I mean, Vish talks on the show quite a lot about Manchester United, and the defenders they've got are only as good as the shielding in front of them, which at the moment hasn't been mobile enough, hasn't been any good. So what you can do if you're not careful when you play with a five defenders like that, as they were with Tete and Brian, particularly without the ball, you can find yourself under a huge amount of pressure. And when you're playing with no confidence and you don't feel like you've got goals in your team, it's difficult.
And McGinn's only just come back after an ankle break.
Big bonus for them.
And he was imperious.
He's
had
great.
Such a good time. How he will continue that form against other teams, I don't know, but he's like a new signing for them. I think the manager actually said that, in fact.
Yeah, and Fulham, to me, it's a bit like, if we can get down the flanks into that area, we can put the ball in the box and Mitrovic might head the ball in. But the reality is it could have been worse for Fulham because Ollie Watkins delivered one of the most bizarre headers I've ever seen. Where like he completely malfunctioned, like a foot out from the ball hitting his head, and it went back the other way.
You remember all the handballs from the weekend? I'm not going near it.
Yeah, like seal.
Yeah, and one of the things that doesn't happen enough, and I should have mentioned it in the Arsenal game, but I forgot, is that one of the goals Liverpool score, I think it might be the Jota one, it's when Luiz heads the ball out.
David Luiz, I meant to say that. He just tonks it towards Jota, which is helpful.
I don't know why top players do that, because you're never coached to defend like that with a header. You're coached to head it back where it came from, or if worst case scenario, head it the other way, because it's the same way goalkeepers, when they parry, they always want to parry out to the left or the right. They don't want to parry straight. Because
you're saying David Luiz did something not good?
I think he's eccentric. I'm starting to pick up that he might be a little bit eccentric. And Ollie Watkins, I think he's a really good player, Ollie Watkins. And I think that if he's given the right service, I know he didn't score last night, he can get amongst the goals definitely for Villa this season. He's definitely good enough. He's got all the tools.
We should be positive. We should praise Villa a bit.
Definitely,
because they were good and they have been good. And let's not forget, they're nearly at the top of this table that means so much at the moment.
I think they might.
Two games only, obviously.
I think they might be there in May.
What?
No, I don't.
Yeah, no, it's good to see Aston Villa doing well. And quite a few people have been saying, actually, I think on maybe it was on the BBC podcast actually afterwards, that they look like a team who've had a chance to dig in and play a Premier League season and get settled and not be sort of, you know, Bambi, rabbit in the headlights style performance. And also, let's not forget, they've got the wonderful Emi Martinez, who plenty of Arsenal fans would have liked to see stay at their club.
They would have. I heard Arsenal fans, some of them at least, saying that they would prefer him to start the game. I don't think Bert Leno's really been that convincing. And he certainly wasn't that convincing last night either, in my view. But it might be because he's being played up against Alisson, who is a ridiculous man in every way. Yeah, apart from that, it wasn't really his fault. Well, you can't really ask a goalkeeper to legislate for the idea that defender, who's brilliant, is going to mess up. And then the striker's going to mess up the finish, which means you're already going to have dived and you can't get up. It happened with De Gea, didn't it, with that Panenka penalty? Like Vish said, I think it was yesterday. Just stay on the ground. It's going in. Just stay on the ground.
Yeah.
You can't save the ball, but you could save your dignity. And you're David De Gea. You need your dignity.
So, like, you're saying, because if he'd actually struck it properly, Alisson...
He saves it properly.
Probably would have saved
it. Well, it's a better chance of saving it.
So it's actually extremely clever, that sort of
kind of
fluffy
4D chess.
Yeah, it's a kind of move that will see Alexander Lacazette at Roma by the end of their transfer window. That's what I think.
I was downgraded from Roma.
Apparently, yeah, I said Roma. I've gone too specific there, haven't I?
That's what threw me. I was like, what do you know?
He has been,
the transfer window still, mate.
He has been linked. He has been linked with the move away.
Yeah, okay.
To Italy, I believe, yeah. There we go. I reckon they would have watched that last night and gone, oh, he's capable of that as well, is he?
Chaos theory.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all 4D chess, isn't it, Pete? You're absolutely right. Okay, we need to consider that. We need to take a break. And then we're going to talk about the future of football.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Leeds was the most difficult away. Chelsea, come on. Arsenal is flying in the moment. Eh? Aston Villa flying. That's not a mistake. That's just a curiosity of ball, foot, grass, whatever.
Just a curiosity of ball, foot, grass, whatever.
I like the box.
Yeah.
Klopp is on a war path. He's on a rampage.
He is. Siege.
Curiosity of ball. That's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. He's a poet. That's what Jurgen Klopp is. I often think it... Welcome back to Football Ramble, guys. Good to have you with us. And good to have you emailing in, more to the bloody point. Show at footballramble.com. It's easy, is what it is. It's easy to remember. It's easy to store it in your little...
Yeah, less letters to type.
Yeah.
Or fewer.
Fewer, thank you very much. Thank
We've had an email from Sondre Angard. Hello to you, Sondre, who says, with all this discussion about a penalty kick being too harsh a punishment in some cases, I suggest giving the referee the opportunity to award, in quotes, a soft penalty.
Oh, soft penalty.
Yeah. Ooh. It sounds like the sort of penalty you get on Channel 4 after midnight. With that voiceover you just done there.
David Duchovny is soft penalty.
Here are a few examples, okay? David Duchovny, no, I'm joking. A penalty is taken from further away.
Oh, right. So like you have a one-man free kick, no wall.
You have a secondary penalty spot, I suppose, Sondre is suggesting there.
Okay.
The opposition is allowed two goalkeepers. I'm not sure about that one. It gets a bit faster.
I don't think that's helpful either.
No,
I don't either.
Impossible.
The opposition captain gets to choose the penalty taker. I like that.
That's nice.
So
keeper every time. Shoot.
Or it's a hockey penalty with a 5-second head start on the chasing defender. So kind of like they used to do in MLS when it was Nazzle, I think, back in the day, where you run from the halfway line.
That would be terrifically exciting, but I do sort of worry that just professional fouls all over the gap.
Oh, yeah.
Just pick the one player who hasn't had one. Yeah. And it was really quick.
I wondered whether a slight change to the penalty rule could make it more interesting. I mean, completely apart from all this, is maybe the person who wins the penalty has to take it.
And that's something that should have been in place when I played at Wembley that time, where I won a penalty, and because I'm not very good at penalties, I gave it to some random bloke I never knew.
Yeah.
I never knew him.
Yeah.
And he took the penalty, and I missed out on the chance to score.
Why'd you do
at Wembley?
That?
Because I'm a bloody idiot.
There's only one situation in which if I'd won a penalty at Wembley, someone else would have been taking it, and that was me dying of a heart attack on the pitch. Anyway, Sondra carries on by saying, a clear-cut penalty where there is an obvious benefit from the foul to the defending team should still be classed as a classic penalty, but will now be called, as David Duchovny would call it, Pete, a hard penalty.
Right, like hard lemonade.
Yeah.
Like a hoochie spot kick.
Hard cider. I think what's happening here, though, is we're getting in danger of trying to have really complicated ways of solving problems that are actually quite easy to solve if we just admit we were wrong and
Luke,
say change it back.
Inject the penalty taker with a muscle relaxant. A floppy pen or
to be administered by the opposite captain.
Yeah,
he's like medically trained.
he's not even a vein.
Yeah, that's Alexander Mitrovic. he's a mad scientist.
He's put the needle right through my chest.
Oh God!
Rotten.
Well, you know how there was this whole thing about messing up the penalty spot. Something to do with that, mate. Or maybe people could be like kicking their own penalties at you while you're trying to take
vegetables at you.
Throwing veg stocks, a sort of stock setup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you have players lined up on the right hand side of the penalty box and they're just kicking balls across like a wall of.
Exactly.
Like a wall of balls.
It's going to confuse the keeper.
You've got to get through the wall of ball.
It's going to confuse the keeper. Yeah.
This is turning into Gladiator.
Yeah. I think if we're getting to a point now where penalties are being awarded for things that are so soft, we're trying to change how the penalties are taken.
Night matches, lights off, tops off.
It might have gone too far.
Yeah. Tops off.
Well, I just added tops off for fun.
Soft penalty. When he's about to start the run up, all the floodlights go out.
A glass ball. Smashing.
That might not make that much
difference. With a rose in it.
That would make it easier for the penalty taker and harder for the goalkeeper.
I thought about that halfway through, but I just stuck with it.
Nice. I like that.
Stuck with it.
Through to the climax. Lovely.
Anyway, any other suggestions for that will be welcomely received.
Can we the ball in acid.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Okay, he will continue to do this until you stop him.
You have
just so
to.
You know.
Because also, these things are not helping the goalkeeper, by the way, because your hands are all full of acid.
Keeper has a knife.
So we've had an email from Josh Young. Speaking of stopping you, where is the bloody email jingle, Petey?
Look, I have been in touch with my jingle people once again this morning.
He was made promises about email stories
that
weren't kept.
Promises about email jingles that were not kept, and we have negotiated a fee. $170 for a repeat offender.
Yeah.
Some repeat business. And it will be coming as soon as I've paid that invoice.
All
but
right,
not invoiced me yet.
Well, I believe you, but it has been a long old build up, hasn't it?
And what do you want me to do?
Okay,
I'm working with a COVID tinged US jingle problem.
Okay, it also took Pete 4 years to hand in his expenses. So if that's anything to go by, I wouldn't.
Instantly
hold
went
there.
On holiday.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Now, this email is. It's a long one, guys, just to gear you up, just to prepare you mentally. And it's from Josh Young. Thank you for emailing it. And the subject line is, do we need to kill football to save it? Well, you've come to the right place with that question, Josh.
That doesn't mean giving the keeper a knife, Pete.
No,
chop it in half and it might duplicate like a worm.
Hi, Ramble. This isn't intended as some kind of ridiculous time-wasting idea like points for the FA Cup and winning halves and the rest of that crap. This is serious. Thank you, Josh. Very sensible. Football worldwide is in a precarious position now due to COVID-19 with no real sign of a plan for coming through it or what comes next. Even before the pandemic, we've seen evidence of the unsustainability of some football clubs such as Bury and my team Bolton in the last couple of seasons. Now, with no fans allowed for the time being, even rumours of League One and Two going into some sort of hibernation, it must be time for change. Okay. England has, from my knowledge, a larger football pyramid than most other countries in the world. Yeah. And while it was held up as a sign of how much we love football and how great we are at our game, inverted commas, perhaps it needs to be looked at and change is necessary. I've no evidence to base this on. Good man, Josh. And from what I've heard Andy talk about on both the Ramble and on the Continent on the Mailbag as well, it doesn't seem as though the smaller pyramids across Europe are having more success with dealing with the financial struggles. That said, it's surely worth some consideration. We have such a small land mass. Considering geography, nice. The number of clubs that we have in our leagues, maybe it's time to start thinking about merging teams in order to save our game, whether this means we condense into having just two top leagues or maybe three at a push. I know that the immediate reaction might be to argue against the suggestion due to the tradition of certain football clubs, and also that's what we're here for, and how good they are for the community. But surely it's better to begin to merge clubs before they all go out of business. Surely having fewer clubs and merged teams means that the running of football in the country becomes more sustainable. Nobody knows what's going to happen, and I feel this is as good a time as any to start tearing things apart in order to save what we love. Thank you, Josh.
Interesting email.
I am exhausted, frankly.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I would say good on Josh for actually suggesting something that dare not speak its name normally, because there are undoubtedly going to be some creative solutions needed to navigate what is a very tricky time for football in this country. And I think I've been of the opinion over the last week or so that it's not, maybe even longer than that, it's not really been spoken about enough that football is in a pretty parlous state financially, and it was before this pandemic, and it continues to be, and it will get worse. And before Jonathan Liu wrote something in The Guardian this morning, I hadn't really seen a huge amount of people talking about it to any great degree and great length. And you know, if you listen to the radio and listen to the news and watch the news and all the rest of it, people like Rick Parry, other people are saying this is, you know, we are going to need some kind of rescue package here. We're saying for this sport to survive as we know it, a rescue package is needed. Now, I don't know whether that's going to come from the top of the game or the government or whatever, but it is going to have to happen. And I think what Josh cuts to here is the core of the idea that it might be a decision that has to be made whether clubs do merge or do make a decision that perhaps wouldn't be popular, because the alternative is they won't exist at all. And that's a pretty unpalatable thing to be talking about on a football show, because every single one of those clubs that exist, not just in England, but in Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland and beyond as well, are important to some people. I mean, they're community-focused places, so they are really important, whether they're a huge club or not. So it's worrying. And I think what it speaks to is the idea that it's very difficult in modern society for things to dominate the news cycle for very long. Like, you look at what happens over in the US with what's happening politically and what's happening here with things like Brexit and everything like that. People just get fatigued of the amount of news, and they want something else to think about. But these problems when it comes to football and finances, they're not going away. So people need to prepare for them in some way. I mean, we know we've seen the salary caps introduced in some football league divisions, which has, of course, been immediately challenged by the PFA because they think they might be unlawful. So that's going to run and run. It's loads to think about. And we can talk about the games and have fun talking about goals and all the rest of it, but ultimately, these decisions are going to have to be made at some point.
Well, I mean, if you look at like the way that the National League level of club are kind of at massive amounts of risk, because the leagues had to delay the start of their leagues until people were allowed back into the stadiums.
Yeah.
Obviously, due to what might be argued a poor governmental response to COVID, the clubs have been hung out to dry, and they can't restart their season. So, you know, it's a lack of a decent kind of administrative response at a governmental level. And then looking at who has received financial bailouts from the government as a business, it's a list as long as your arm. Baker Hughes, a subsidiary of an American company, I believe, $600 million loan, despite having been sued by the HMRC recently for unpaid tax in the last 16 years. JCB, they got their $600 million loan after donating money to Boris Johnson. Chanel, owned by a company in the Caymans, got their $600 million. Almost five billion pounds have been handed out to companies with links to tax havens. Now, you know, so we can't let the government say that there's empty pockets when it comes to football league clubs, certainly football league clubs at the very least. And, you know, you're looking at the way that the British have kind of handled their kind of bailouts. It's not going to direct companies. It's going to the banks that support the loan mechanism for clubs. So clubs, we're not giving you any money. We're not loaning you any money directly, but you can loan money from the banks that we are bailing out effectively.
Right.
So it just kicks the can down the road 6 months, whatever they do. They need direct money, they need direct investment, and it's say, you know, 100, 200 clubs below the Premier League that need that help. It's not a huge amount of money in the grand scheme of things. When you're looking at, you know, throwing, you know, 600 million here, there, and everywhere to companies that aren't even registered.
And what could be argued to be more culturally significant in this country than football? There's not. I mean,
to a certain class of people that government has historically not necessarily.
I think it's more than that, though. I think if you look at it's counterintuitive to think, but as far as I know, I think I'm right in saying that the tendency is overall until COVID came in, year on year we're increasing, and people were watching more and more football live than they ever had before, despite prices being high, and there could be a number of different reasons for that.
Well, it's also partly to do with people being encouraged to, or people wanting as well to go to non-league, even people lower down the pyramid, women's football, stuff that's cheap, right? That you can take your kids to, and you can buy
Hashtag #United.
Yeah, but they're a community club. They're a community-based club. I mean, they're doing an amazing thing, in my opinion. I also think it's worth pointing out something that we haven't mentioned in this discussion yet, which is the idea that for all the clubs below the Premier League, of course, gate receipts and match day revenue is of much bigger significance because the TV deals aren't as pricey. So they're going to be disproportionately affected when compared to Premier League clubs as well. But it's hard to know, based on what you said there, Pete, if the government aren't showing any inclination to invest in things like the arts, they're not doing it in football, because I think people think of football and they think of the very top of football the same way they think of actors are really well paid. Well, they're not, because 99% of actors don't earn anything. Yeah. And it's probably the same with footballers. League Two footballers aren't wealthy.
No,
not in the grand scheme of things.
Why can't the FA just supply a fairly rudimentary and simple three camera broadcasting system for a web-based kind of subscription solution, for example, for next, it would take three cameras, a laptop, a mixing system, and a website for you to purchase, and that could be an off-the-peg solution where you can watch your club £10 a pop just to see you through the rest of the week.
I was under the impression most places had that.
They do
in the league, but you were going below the league.
There's a lot of things. You know, I'm sure, I don't know if you guys would have done, but a lot of kind of non-league commentary gigs that you can do. Like, there's a hell of a lot of clubs doing, you know, when you're coming up trying to work in football, there's a hell of a lot of clubs trying to get their sport out to as many people as they can. I mean, the thing that concerns me really is that the attitude or the response to some of these questions seems to have been from the government, the Premier League needs to be responsible for supporting the rest of the football pyramid, which smacks a little bit of what we got at the start of the pandemic, which was, oh, you know, why aren't these footballers who've got loads of money helping with charitable causes? And it's like, the answer is they actually are, but it's much easier to have a pop at those guys than it is to actually try and work on something yourselves. Now, look, I don't know. There are plenty of people who are working extremely hard at difficult issues, both within government and obviously within the Premier League, trying to, presumably, having these conversations. But it does seem, you know, it's not quite the same comparison to say, like, oh, Amazon aren't trying to support local grocers and all that sort of stuff, because it's of benefit to the Premier League for these clubs to survive, because the football pyramid supports itself and builds up to the pinnacle of it. Whereas, I guess, if Amazon puts a grocer or a bookshop out of business, it's like quids in. What a good idea.
I think Amazon have made, I mean, I think it's pretty pretty low, but they have made a contribution to local business and stuff. I mean, that obviously, I understand that's not the point you're making. I think for me, though, Kate, it's the principle of it, which is that this is an unprecedented situation. We can all accept that. And this is not something we've ever had to experience before. And what's really indicative is how people initially react to that. Now, if they react to it by saying, let's get together and work out some solutions here, then you can say, okay, people are trying their best. If their reaction is, as you've alluded to, Kate, which I agree with, where you start pointing the finger and say, well, it's their responsibility and it's theirs, and it's not ours, that's not the way we're going to get through this. The way we're going to get through this is to collaborate and make a decision as a group about how we can help people who need this help a lot more than we do. And if people aren't going to take responsibility at government level, at Premier League level, at whatever level, it's not going to be solved. And the reality is going to be that these clubs, who, by the way, were already in a parlous financial state before this came along, and they were already going out of business. And I saw firsthand the way the community was affected when it happened with Portsmouth, who are very, very fortunate to still be a football club. Let's make that absolutely clear. You know, they stiffed through the mechanisms they used. They stiffed St John's Ambulance. They stiffed local businesses. Yeah. They stiffed all these things because they had to, because otherwise they wouldn't have existed anymore. These are tough decisions that have to be made. And when you extrapolate that out across not just one or two clubs, not just a Bury, a Bolton, and a Portsmouth, but across 25 clubs, it's going to change the football landscape in its entirety, and it will affect every single professional club in this country, no matter how big they are. And I just sometimes feel like human beings generally aren't very good at planning for what's going to happen. They're much better at reacting to something after it's happened. And that's why, for example, the measures weren't taken ahead of a pandemic, even though every single scientific body was saying this is the biggest threat to our society. It wasn't happening. So
roll on climate change.
Well, exactly. It's another great example. So these are big questions to be solved. I'm not suggesting us on the Ramble can solve them, but we should raise awareness for them, because I don't think it's being talked about enough, and it affects a huge amount of people listening to this show today.
Yeah, absolutely does. Well, I mean, we've come a long way really from your letter, Josh, and it's it's interesting, of course, that Josh is a supporter of Bolton, who know about this more than any...
Well, good on Josh for starting the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so thank you so much for emailing shirtfootballramble.com.
I like, Kate, that you brought up that, some people, some presenters at first kind of commentary gigs are on in lower league football.
Yeah.
So we should do pro bono. We should do pro bono commentary work in many ways, yeah.
Yeah, you get Dawson.
I don't know what's going on. What's going on?
That's Chris Kamara.
That's Chris Kamara.
Oh, no. I love Chris, but that isn't what he's
like. It's between Chris Kamara and Robbie Savage. Actually, Robbie Savage signed the letter, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
With Greg Dyke and... Yeah.
I believe he's reasonably active in a couple of the clubs close to him, I think.
Yeah. Robbie Savage?
I think so, yeah.
Credit to Robbie Savage,
when he's not buying trainers.
Passing a bit of credit onto Robbie Savage.
Got his little crowns out.
He hates me and Pete, so I'm the bigger man here by saying, get on me. Yeah.
Well, if you're listening, Robbie, why are you still listening? That's a really weird thing to be doing.
He will be listening.
Exactly. Same reason why Tim Lovejoy is listening.
Yeah. Pete got approached by Tim Lovejoy once, didn't you, Pete?
Did I get approached?
You did.
That sounds like...
Didn't you say someone
naughty?
Didn't you say that?
I heard a friend of a friend that I shall not reveal. Why did they hate me?
Yeah,
about the Ramble.
We don't hate him.
I don't hate him. He's very, very popular.
You just think he's rubbish. Before we go, I presume we are going to go at some point, Kate. I know it was discussed yesterday that often
we've got to do this pro bono commentary. Yeah, exactly, so actually, yeah.
we'll do it from here.
Yeah.
The other guy said yesterday Nicolas Otamendi is going to leave Manchester City.
Yeah.
They didn't discuss his tattoos. Have we discussed his tattoos on this show?
I feel as though it must have happened at some stage.
He's got a very ornate tattoo of Walter White on his back.
Yeah.
From Breaking Bad. Yes.
It is dog shit. And is it a Viking as well?
And I think he might have...
from Vikings and a Peaky Blinder.
Has he got Conor McGregor on his back?
Stop it! No,
that's
doesn't.
Not Conor McGregor. That's
looks
a Viking.
Like Conor McGregor.
Looks
like,
yeah.
And he's got who? Peaky Blinders?
He's
your favourite?
Peaky Blinder.
Pete goes to Peaky Blinders convention.
I do, yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Is that why you're dressed like that today?
By order of the Peaky Blinders. Oh, are they Brum,
sounds
aren't
a bit
they?
Like that, yeah.
Somewhere.
Anyway, there you go, Kate.
But he's not only got the Viking character. I don't know who it is, because who the fuck watches that? But he's got the word Vikings written on top, like the logo.
Has he actually?
Incredible.
I haven't seen that bit.
Yeah. So they did the Viking tattoo on this. What do you think? Do you think people definitely know it's a Viking? Just put Vikings across the bottom.
Well, they're very accurate, but I mean... Wow, they're...
How do you mean very accurate?
I mean, they're accurate depictions of what it's supposed to be.
Oh, I see. It's lovely artistry, is what you're saying.
I think the Walter White one looks good.
Yeah.
I would never have it, but it looks good.
It looks accurate.
You're not going to go for a full back tattoo of the whole of the Ramble cast?
I've got too much of a fat back.
Well, Otamendi...
Well, isn't that helpful? More space.
More space, more real estate.
real
estate. They won't be called it real estate.
I mean, to be honest, I think he's got some mad shit on his back to detract from the fact his left tit is a bear and his right tit is a lion.
Show me that again.
Rawr.
Would we call those tits?
Yeah.
Boobies.
I think
boobs.
We're very brave at a microphone, but Nicolas Otamendi would pound us into dust.
God, he would, yeah.
If he was here, wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
He'd make us kiss his lion and bear.
Yeah. From the sounds of things, you wouldn't mind.
I would do that. Yeah. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Seems like
I'd lick every bit of Nicolas Otamendi. Every last inch.
Kate, as again, he will continue to do this
until we get out of here. So I'd just like to offer our apologies to Robbie Savage, Tim Lovejoy,
end
and
of the fingers.
Nicolas Otamendi, and to you, dear listeners. Thank you for staying with us on tomorrow's show. It is Jules, Andy and Vish. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
You're not allowed to say goodbye, Pete. I've been Kate Mason.
Otamendi.
Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact,
you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.